Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on controls, and this is going to be open forum. I have a feeling there's going to be a little talk about the election, but this is open forum, so the phone number is 713-526-5738. I am so stressed right now. Oh, my God. Okay, let's start with a couple of announcements. I guess the first one should be, tomorrow is election day. If you have not yet early voted, tomorrow is your last chance. We were having a little bit of a discussion before airtime. I don't normally, when I'm being serious, engage in hyperbole. I tend to be a little more measured in things that I say, because, you know, otherwise you don't get taken seriously. I will tell you, at risk of sounding like I am engaging in hyperbole, that it's not impossible. I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's not impossible that no matter what the outcome of the election tomorrow, the fate of our nation as we know it could be at stake. We have a guy who, if he wins, has the most authoritarian bent of perhaps anybody who has ever run for the presidency in this country. We have a guy, that same guy, if he loses, is talking about contesting vote counts, which, you know, within certain limitations is certainly his right. But we're talking about contesting the election, threatening impeachment. The party that sort of supports him and sort of doesn't and sort of endorses him and sort of doesn't, and whose members and elected officials sort of vote for him and sort of don't. We now have two senators, one of whom is respected, the other is most hated man in Washington. But nonetheless, we have two senators, McCain and Cruz, and you can guess which is which, who have said that if they retain control of the Senate, that they will not approve any Supreme Court appointment made by a President Hillary Clinton. Now, it's worth noting that we already have one open seat. That the open seat is the guy who, from an actuarial standpoint, was the least likely to drop dead while he was a justice. We have two or three other justices that are in their late 70s, early 80s. We could very well be looking at appointing up to three justices to the Supreme Court. Or, if the Republicans have their way as they have threatened, we could be down to as few as six justices on the Supreme Court for the duration of a Clinton presidency. Impeachment proceedings. We have a Republican congressman who actually is already investigating the possibility of impeaching Hillary Clinton literally from the day she is inaugurated in office. We have an opposition party. Well, let's not say opposition because it depends on how you want to define that. We have a right-wing conservative party that is willing to obstruct anything that a new president does. They're willing to paralyze the government with all kinds of investigations, inquiries, and potential impeachments, that is willing to paralyze and to some extent emasculate the judicial branch of our government, not only from the Supreme Court level, but probably all the way down into the federal and district court levels, the district and appeals court levels that are federal courts. We are facing potentially a grave crisis. And even if the Democrats are lucky enough to win the presidency, the Senate, and if Hillary Clinton has a large enough margin, even in spite of gerrymandering, maybe the House, that is the only way I could see to keep the Republicans from 4 years of constitutional horror inflicted on our country. And the Democrats are going to have to find spines that are, you know, it's not common for Democrats to find spines. We got a couple. I am concerned. You know, if you've ever read or heard of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you know, the big thing emblazoned on the cover is don't panic. Have your towel handy and don't panic. I am not panicking. But as you can tell, I am feeling just a little wigged out. Okay, so let's get to some actual, like, stuff here. First of all, if you have any questions about your ballot or about your voting location, you can go to harrisvotes.com. If you live in Harris County, you put in your name or your address, and it will show you your specific ballot as well as where you must go to vote. I believe that poll times typically are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. If you get online at 6:58, you can still vote, even if, God forbid, it takes 3 or 4 more hours to vote. As long as you are online before polls close, or supposedly close, as long as you are online, the polls will stay open at your precinct until everybody online before 7 p.m. has a chance to vote. So don't be afraid of getting there at the last minute. That's okay. You will still be permitted to vote. If you're not in Harris County, and I know many of our listeners are not, you can also go to VoteTexas, that's one word, votetexas.gov. And again, you can find where you are supposed to vote, whether you are registered, whether there's any problem with your registration. If you go to a precinct and are challenged, you can submit what they call a, Bob, help me out here. What is it? What's the ballot if your ballot is challenged? Or
a provisional ballot?
A provisional. You can still insist on filing a provisional ballot so that your vote potentially, especially in a close election, can still be counted. Fate of the country, man. We're talking serious business. I think that this is potentially the most serious election that we have had since around the time of the Civil War. You can argue whether it was the 1856 or the 1860 or the 1864, but yeah, this is that kind of serious. So I'm telling you, go out and vote. Make sure that people you know, if they have not early voted, go out and vote. This is very, very serious business. This is not a time to kick back and let someone else decide. Bob, you had something?
Well, I wasn't listening. I was answering it.
I hope that isn't spreading.
I have more than one job here, you know. But you asked me earlier, say it's 7 to 7, right?
I believe
so
it's 7 to 7.
That?
I did.
Yeah, I looked it up for you.
Okay,
it
so is. The polls 7 open to 7. At 7 a.m. You can start lining up earlier. I got on the line for early voting 10 minutes before they opened, the second day of early voting. So you can line up early, and as long as you are online before 7 p.m., they must allow you to vote. As long as you are online before 7 p.m. 6:59 p.m.
Oh, by the way,
yes.
You just, when Bobby stepped in, it's inline, not online. That's what he was just telling me when I was distracted a moment ago. He came in here
Is there
he said inline. He must be referring to something you had already said a few minutes ago.
Well, in line,
when you're standing in line, you're saying online as though you can Google yourself to Saudi Arabia.
I do not want to be ambiguous here. You must be standing in the line.
Yes, sir.
On the line. On the line.
And you better be
in the line.
You know, face forward, feet together.
And what they will do, if you are online, in line, at 7 p.m.,
right.
What will happen is probably the precinct judge or one of the voting clerks will come out and either stand at what is then the end of the line, or they will give you a sign to hold to show that you are the end of the line, you were there at 7 p.m., and that nobody can stand behind you and still vote. So don't be deterred. This could literally decide to some extent what our country really is like, not only for the next 4 years, but beyond. I'm sorry, Bob.
Don't be deterred, but please bring tomatoes.
If that's what makes you happy, okay, bring tomatoes, bring lunch, bring a soft drink, whatever makes you happy if it keeps you online to vote. All right, let me make a couple of quick announcements, and then I'll start taking phone calls. 713-526-5738. We have three callers, but we have open lines. Okay, the first thing to announce is this coming Wednesday, so Wednesday this week, I guess it'll be the 9th, assuming that we still exist as a nation, there will be a North Dakota Access Pipeline fundraiser in Houston. It will be on Wednesday, November 9th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Pilot Station 5102 Navigation. If you have any questions, you can call Ben at 832-297-8595. The other announcement I have is on Sunday, November 13th, so this coming Sunday, from 1:30 to 4:30, in the concourse room of the downtown Houston Public Library, KPFT will be holding its second Pacifica bylaws-mandated town hall meeting for 2016. This is an opportunity for listeners to express their wants and needs and concerns about KPFT. If you want your views to be known, please come to this event. Programmers are also being encouraged to attend. I'll see what I can do. No promises. But listeners can come and say their piece.
Thanks, Mike. And I want to just add, I think that's a great programmer opportunity. You know, we used to have a program council. And so
it's a great opportunity. My problem is that I literally live on vampire hours. So at 1:30, I've been sleeping for about 3 hours. So that's how screwed up I am.
Well, I'll bring a cup of coffee if you promise to show up.
I can't make a promise. I'll make an effort.
Okay.
Okay. So first one up is Jerry. Thank you for waiting, Jerry. You are on the air. How are you doing tonight? Are you nervous?
Not as nervous as you are.
Oh, well, that's good. Someone has to be not as nervous as I am.
Oh, I don't think this is an existential crisis. It certainly isn't yet. And for the country and or for, you know, basically our political system.
I'm just concerned for the different potentialities that any outcome might give rise to.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Like I said, guys like you and me don't have anywhere near as much to worry about or lose, depending on how this thing goes down, as, you know, GLBTQ people, African-Americans, Hispanics,
If you're not Christian and you're not white, I am one out of two. I am white.
No, even there, though, I don't think you got too much to worry about. The thing about it is that I really don't think that... Now, if you're younger, too, you got something to worry about.
Yeah, because you'll have to live with it longer. I'll be dead in 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, things are kind of set up or almost in play for you and me that are probably going to stay the same for a range of reasons. But that's not necessarily true for younger people. They've got a lot to lose here, potentially. And everything, you know, it's just like I said, you know, I know a few people, my landlord's one of them. You know, if he votes for Trump, you know, if I was in his shoes, I told him, and I meant this 100%, I said, I would actually seriously consider voting for Trump if I were in your shoes. But and everything. It won't, you know, a Trump presidency, there are some people that, you know, it won't hurt, or, you know, basically they might even come out a little ahead.
And yet history and statistics and actual facts suggest that even your landlord should be voting Democratic, that businesses do better under Democratic
rule. Well, now, that's true. That's true. But, you know, whenever you bring it up and all of those numbers exist, every time you bring that up, though, what I've observed is that Republicans basically say that somehow or another the economy's been gamed, or they sit there and say that that's all a lie.
Well,
everything. I've actually seen stuff online, conversations about that, where people have actually brought up the point you just made, and basically Republicans can't deal with the reality of it.
Exactly.
And people further out to the right are even less able to deal with it.
Conservatives cannot deal with actual reality, which is a big part of our problem in the political discourse today, is reality is considered alternative history. And
the reality is this. And I'm going to say it yet again. I've said it over the years in different ways on the air at KPFT. The reality is that material factors will out eventually and all that. You know, basically, you know, where you can sit there and you can say all day long that trickle-down economics works. The history of it is it doesn't work.
No.
And everything. And so far as we've got results, we know it doesn't work. It doesn't do what. That doesn't do a number of things that they said it would do.
We have 30 years of statistical and actuarial and economic data that shows it does not work. Demographic. We have more conclusive data. It's literally been an experiment with a multi-trillion dollar economy with hundreds of millions of people. Thank you so much, conservatives. And it has proven categorically it not only doesn't work, but if you go to Kansas and brownback country, it is destructive.
Oh, yeah. No, that's absolutely true. And that's something else that I've been trying to point out to people. Some of the people who are going to come out worse under a Donald Trump presidency, millions, probably tens of millions of people who are going to come out worse under a Donald Trump presidency are exactly the ones that are going to vote for him.
Yeah.
That's another reason why I sit there and I go, you know, Trump gets elected. Hey. And all that. I can afford much more so than a lot of people take that attitude. Now, of course, I voted for Hillary. Let me hasten to add.
Let me tell you what drives me nuts. You know, we constantly talk about the pendulum swinging. You know, you get a little more progressive, you get a little more conservative. Can I say right now that pendulum swinging drives me nuts? That if you have a thing that's working, just stick with it?
I happen to totally agree with you, but I've heard people make exactly the argument you just made. There's one or two guys that live at the same place I do and rent at the same place I do who have made exactly that argument. And I think that's the biggest pile of bunk in creation. Also, I'd like to say something else.
What, you believe in pendulum? Hold on. You believe in pendulums? Or you believe in stability if something is working?
I believe in stability if something's working. Yeah, they made the argument that you just made, which is that, you know, not that you made, but they said what you said, which is that, you know, the pendulum swung too far to the left. I couldn't disagree more. I don't think the pendulum swung far enough to the left, personally.
So far, it hasn't swung at all to the left. Maybe after this election, it might swing somewhat to the left. But the center has moved to the right. So it's like you have a pendulum that has a limp.
Yeah.
And it always limps to the right.
The thing about it is it doesn't even, you know, you sit there and you say conservatives. There's not a real Burkean conservative hardly up there in the Congress any longer. If there is, they're probably Democrats. They're probably conservative Democrats.
Blue Dog Democrats.
If you actually resurrected the ghost of Edmund Burke and said, who do you think is the real, you know, and you told him what was really going on and everything, he would probably point to the conservative Democrats. And everything, he said, those are the, and moderate Democrats too, no doubt, to a certain degree. You know, those are the conservatives.
You know, I have no issue with conservatism as it used to be. I have no problem with having a political counterpoint because, you know, the liberals and progressives have their extremists too. And generally the best solutions are somewhere in the range of the center, a little left, a little right. Everybody's concerns deserve to be addressed. Everybody's reasonable concerns. You know, there's a reason that that guilt in a criminal trial is beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not beyond any doubt. And now you can argue in some cases maybe it ought to be, like a death penalty case. But it's beyond a reasonable doubt. Reasonable concerns need to be taken into account, whether they're conservative or progressive. And we are now in an environment where we have a major party that has been taken over by people that are so far to the right that they would, I think, at least figuratively, I was going to say literally, but that's not true, that they would figuratively be willing to burn the country down if they can't get their way.
Yeah, but they're locked in, but they're not conservatives, like I said.
But people are electing them.
There are conservatives out there that, and you know, they're Republicans, and I actually think fairly highly of them, but it's a very small number of people. And there actually are some prominent ones that I actually think fairly highly of, but, you know, Judge Posner, Kevin Phillips, even old Mr. Axis of Evil himself, David Frum.
Man, David Frum is going
genuine conservative, but you know what?
David Frum is going through some serious evolution. I'm telling you.
Oh yeah,
you.
No, David Frum has basically all but been read out of certain parts of the Republican Party. They basically have. This has happened to Kevin Phillips and to all these guys. They really are honest to God working conservatives. And what's happened is they sat there and said, you know, you're not conservative enough for us. In other words, you're not right wing enough for us.
Right, exactly.
And,
yeah, David Frum is a conservative.
Of all those guys.
David Frum is definitely a conservative. If you've followed him, I mean, I've disagreed with him forever, but I've never thought he was crazy. He always seemed like a reasoned guy. And now it's like he's head-slapping voting for Hillary. You could see he was on Bill Maher the other night. And it's like, yeah, I voted for Hillary.
I'll tell you what, my problem isn't so much with that as I have a problem with that, and that is a key problem ideologically with the ideological landscape. Another problem that I have, though, too, is the fact that Democrats really missed the boat in more ways than one. And I've thought this over the years. I've never really articulated it, I don't think, over the air. But I do think that Democrats should have made much more of an effort to basically to make more of an appeal to people in, like, the Midwest, in the Rust Belt, and all that. And there's a couple of journalists who really did make this point. This is a key point. This is a key thing that Democrats missed the boat on. And the two journalists who actually made this point really well, or that I heard actually make it anyway, are Matt Taibbi and he's a writer for New York, for the New Yorker.
Chait?
No, what?
Chait?
Packard, George Packard.
Packard.
Yeah, Packard. And everything. Both of them made the same argument, and they said, you know, this was a key oversight by – I actually did say that about the South. I didn't say that about the Midwest, but I did say that about the South before on the air. But I never did say it about the Midwest. We neglected those people.
I want to tell you, this has been my opinion for a while. I think that we have two – sort of pivotal points in Democratic politics. I think the Vietnam War, among its other traumatizing and destructive effects, essentially traumatized the Democratic Party. It gave the Republicans this thing that they've been saying for the last 40 years, that Democrats aren't serious about national defense. Democrats aren't serious about our military. Democrats are just crazy peaceniks. And because the Democrats have felt so damaged by those claims and by the outcome of the Vietnam War and the way the Vietnam War ended and how it's been basically pasted to their party, I think that from that point on, Democrats started trying to be Republican light. They tried to show they were just as strong as the Republicans, they were just as pro-American and just as pro-military as the Republicans, and that, I think, was the beginning of this mushiness where the Democratic Party started moving from the party of the Voting Rights Act and Medicaid to the party of Republican light. I think that the next pivotal point...
Yeah, I think that started in 1980, I'd put that...
Well,
overdate that more and put that data, further data out than you do. But
anyway. Well, I think you're picking a presidential election. I am picking a point in political time. I think that the next thing was the 94 election, where the Newt Gingrich Republicans came in, which started an era of real confrontation and attempts at governmental gridlock. And
well,
I think
something that Packer brought up. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. But, so I think that this country now is sort of reaping. Well, it's really reaping the 94 election, which, by the way, around that time, I believe, is when Fox News came on the air. So all of that sort of became of a piece. That is what we're paying for now. And the outcome is going to be very, very challenging. I really do think it's going to be the most challenging period since the post-Civil War period. I'm not saying we're going to head into it.
I'm not saying
we're heading into a civil war, but I'm saying that politically, ideologically, in terms of polarization, I think it's going to feel a lot like the period after the Civil War must have felt like.
No, I don't think so. I think what you're saying is polarization is, I think, polarization may be part of it, but the reality is like Republicans are divided like three different ways now. Trump just, you know, Trump's more of a simple symptom of what's wrong with the Republican Party and what's wrong with American politics to a large extent. Than people realize he just had great political instincts for this kind of thing. And I will say this, you know what? You cannot beat good political instincts. That's another thing this election's taught us, is that, you know, the right candidate with the right instincts can really go for the jugular and, really do quite well.
Okay.
And everything, and not have to, you know, necessarily rely so much on polling and stuff like that.
Okay, Jerry, I've got a couple of other
callers. Yeah, let me let you go. I've been on for a while. Yeah, I'll talk to you here later.
Okay. I appreciate everything you've said. I think you've really touched on a lot of very good points. All right. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Bob Gartner on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Remember, you can support KPFT by going to kpft.org, going to the drop-down menu, hopefully picking Think Wing Radio. It's actually locked onto some other show. So go to the drop-down menu and then contribute whatever you can to help keep KPFT and Think Wing Radio on the air. Okay, Gary, I'm sure you have a lot to say. You're on the air.
Not really. Do you ever listen to the Diane Rehm show on NPR?
I've heard pieces, but frankly, I'm one of those typical people that only listens to the radio in the car, and it's not like I commute to work every day, so I don't listen to the radio as often as I would like.
She had a fascinating show today, and they were talking about the structure, kind of what you were just talking about the current government structure and how it's evolved, and how the nation used to be a nation of opposing parties, but that the basis of our government structure and the Congress was to argue and debate and compromise. The French word parliament means that one speaks, but Congress means, from the Greek, to come together. Mm. And she had E.J. Dionne and Kathleen Parker on there, and they were discussing how we've always had opposing parties. And they mentioned the Civil War and the situation there. But they pointed out the situation today is different because it's no longer opponents and partisan discussion, but it's tribalism, which is something you and I touched on a few
you
times.
You always bring it back to that.
But it's true.
It's true to a point.
I'm not going to mention DNA, okay?
No, I agree. But, I've always agreed with you to a point.
But today it was on the radio, for crying out loud, and they said that now we're not, what with the Tea Party and the alt-right and the Freedom Party and all of this, now it's turned into no longer debate, argument, and compromise is turned into kill or be killed. Kill the enemy. We win and you die, or you win and we die, and it's turned into a tribal thing. Now, somebody brought up the fact that a lot of this is motivated by what I would say biology, but the fact that in the next 25 years, white people, per se, okay, Europeans, will be a minority in this country. This is the reaction.
There'll be a majority. There'll be the term. Hold on, Gary.
Wait.
Let me say something. they
I'm
will
asking for your opinion.
Wait.
I have to finish my question.
Yeah, give me a second. They will be termed a majority minority. They'll be like 47. Whites will be like 47% of the population.
Exactly, but this reality of current, well, what would you call it? This reality,
the demographic evolution.
Demographic, that's the word, thank you, is what is motivating this reaction and promoting the support for Trump. But it is still, like it or not, a reality.
Yep.
And it is they're describing this as tribalism. It's no longer, you know, American to the right and American to the left and, you know, slave owners versus freeholders, and it's now like black, Hispanic, white, and it's turning into exactly what brought us A, World War One, B, World War Two, C. Do you see what's happening? You're joking and talking about, you know, a possible revolution.
I'm not joking.
End of the world, but there is a real possibility of violence here. It
yes.
could occur because of the same tribalism that has fueled every war in the history of humanity. Now, what's your opinion of that?
Okay, my opinion of that is Jack McDevitt, the author, I've cited this quote quite a bit, civilization changes one funeral at a time. We have people that have grown up in a time that they have certain expectations. Make America great again has always been a euphemism for make America white again. They want to go back to the 1950s. And you know what? You can never go back in time. I go back to my old neighborhood, and there are things that I used to really enjoy. You know, I kind of wish, kind of like that Twilight Zone episode, Walking Distance, where you can go back to your old town, your old neighborhood, and it's just like you remembered. And you know what? I've been gone since 1977. And it hasn't been anything like I remember for at least 15 years.
Well, Thomas Wolfe said 100 years ago, you can never go home.
You can't go home again. It comes to a point where you become old enough that things change irretrievably, irreversibly, and unrecognizably. Now, I let you go on for a while.
All right. You always go on. It's your show. It's not fair.
I'm kidding.
Please go on.
Okay.
I just like
so, What I see happening, what I have observed in my family and other families, this is how it works. You have immigrants. The immigrants come over with culture from the old country, language from the old country, customs from the old country. Their children, and I'll give the example of my family. My parents understood what their parents were saying in the various languages they were speaking, whether it was Russian or Yiddish or whatever. But they never really learned to speak it. It was spoken at them, but they didn't really learn to speak it. They can understand it. And then because they couldn't speak it, my sister-in-law completely lost it. I have noticed this pattern in Asian families. In the case of my stepdaughter is the child of two native Chinese parents. Even with the efforts they made to speak Chinese around her, to send her to Chinese school, she is illiterate in Chinese, and she can speak it probably at roughly the level of a seven-year-old. So she can sort of make herself clear, but she's not going to talk to her child in Chinese.
So I have a name for that.
What is it?
Assimilation.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's motivating all of the anti-Somali feelings up in Dearborn, Michigan, and Minnesota, because they're saying that, well, fine, they're Muslim, fine, they're from Africa, fine, they speak it, but they will not assimilate.
But here's the thing.
But you're right.
It's going to take.
What makes America great.
It's going to take at least two generations. The immigrant parents are going to have to die. I mean, this is in just cold analytical demographic terms. This is what it's going to take. The difficult or unassimilable or difficult to assimilate parents are going to have to die. The children will be somewhat assimilated or very assimilated. And the grandchildren are essentially going to be Americans who have a heritage. And there's probably in the middle going to be intermarriage somewhere. So you're going to have a lot of mixed ethnicities. It takes 50 to 75 years for an immigrant group to become truly assimilated into this country. It's a multi-generational process. And, you know, people just can't grasp the fact that it's going to take after they're dead for things to sort themselves out. But that's the way it is.
But the people today that are opposed to the immigration and the lack of assimilation, let's say, and I just want to finish this up with one last question.
Okay.
They have the potential to actually be violent, be aggressive,
yes,
be dangerous. Do you think that Trump could motivate an actual, not a civil war, of course, but a disturbance and unrest of violence that could, you know, result in changing the way we live? It doesn't take much to pull a trigger.
My concern, which I have basically expressed tonight, is not so much a concern about the outcome of the election. I'm feeling a little more okay about the outcome of the election. But to directly respond to your question, I don't know whether or not Trump would encourage violence, at least deliberately. I think he has, I think it is in his nature to speak in inflammatory ways. He doesn't like to lose, and if he loses this election, he's going to want to try to find a way that in his head he can still see it as winning. And I think that while he may not encourage directly violence, I think that he will inflame it, and he will probably do little, if anything, to discourage it. That's how I would see it.
Do you think that his comments about the FBI director are sedition?
Tell me what he said.
Well, he said he was great because he was going to review his indictment, the potential to indict Hillary Clinton. And then he said, well, we didn't find anything, so now Donald Trump is saying that he is dishonest and the system's rigged and he's not.
No, I would not.
Isn't that sedition?
I would not call that. I would not call that seditious. I would say that certainly falls firmly into the realm of personal opinion and free speech.
Okay, now, the liberal people, I'm going to let you go.
Right.
I don't want to be a Jerry. The liberal people call themselves progressives. Should not the conservative people start calling themselves the anachronists?
No, I think that conservatives are conservative. I think the problem...
We never, ever change, which means we'd, A, still have slavery and still be riding horses with buggies.
I'm not going to argue.
Not evolved.
I'm not going to argue that. I am a progressive, so obviously I would prefer to move along. But you know, the conservatives sometimes have valid points, and in the effort to move forward progressively, sometimes the conservatives have valid concerns which need to be considered. But the thing is that the people today that are calling themselves conservative, that are talking about their conservative values, these people aren't conservatives. They're reactionaries.
All right.
They're radicals. They're reactionaries. They are by no means the normal, quote-unquote, definition of conservatives.
Well, you know what an anachronism is.
Yes.
All right. Something,
something
like
out of time.
Shooter in a Western movie. Okay.
Yeah, something that's out of place, out of time.
Exactly. Well, doesn't that... Isn't that a synonym for reactionary?
No.
You know, you want to go backwards in time?
No, these people...
They used to call them Luddites.
But that's a different thing again. But these people are not even anachronistic. These people are reactionary, authoritarian. I think, you know, fascist is a word that we've started bandying about lately, which I think is sort of true.
All right,
Gary,
to play devil's advocate.
Wait a minute. I'm going to have to let you go because...
Wait, last question.
Okay.
You gave me one last question.
Yes.
Can all of these different cultures and religions and backgrounds and languages truly exist in one nation? Is not language the glue that holds a nation together?
I agree, but I am also in favor of being multilingual as long as it's understood that English is the lingua franca, so to speak.
Then why are there four languages at the voting sites?
Because you have immigrants who are naturalized citizens who
but
have
how
a
do you vote if you don't speak English in the United States?
Okay, I'm answering your question.
Okay.
You just said there are four languages on the ballot. That's because if you are an immigrant who is a naturalized citizen who struggles with English but still have the right to vote, that's why there are multiple languages.
But I thought you had to speak English to become a naturalized citizen.
You do not. You just have to understand how the government works.
And maybe that's the problem.
No, the problem is not that. The problem is people that hate people that are like that. That's
no,
the problem.
Language.
All right, Gary, going to let you go. This is a conversation for another day.
Think about it, though.
I think about it a lot.
Language is the glue.
I agree with you. I could talk about Canada and bilingualism and francophone and anglophone. I could have that discussion for 15 minutes, but not tonight.
Good night.
Okay, good night. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on controls. And let's see, who's up next? Is it Mark? Mark, man, you have been patient. Mark is up? Okay, Mark, you're on the air. We've also got Ted. Ted, I appreciate your patience. I'm going to try not to go quite so long now. So, Mark.
Well, I'm not going to go long.
Okay, I appreciate your holding, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, the United States should break up into individual states.
Why?
Because the rule of law is not being they're not following the rule of law.
In what way? In what way are they not following the rule of law? What law are you feeling they are not following?
They're not going to. If Hillary Clinton is elected as president. John McCain and one of the other,
Ted Cruz.
Yeah, they're not gonna take any of her Supreme Court nominees.
That's what they are claiming. Whether that's what they do is another question.
But there's other things in
okay.
The state of Texas. I thought that they passed the voter ID law, and then a court told Texas they had to not do that, and I went to vote, and they wouldn't let me vote unless I had an ID. That is, the states need to break up. The law
Why would the states? First of all, let's address your voting problem. You went to early vote, and
I have no voting problem. I just think that the states need to break up.
Wait a minute. Let me address a thing you said. You said that you went to vote, and you did not have adequate ID.
No, I had an ID, but they asked me for an ID, and they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, under current law, they can ask for different forms of ID. And if push comes to shove, according to the federal ruling, you can show them the old kinds of IDs, like a voter registration card, a bill, a bank statement.
Right.
And that might result in a provisional ballot, but they cannot stop you from voting based on the lack
of... And that's intimidation.
Of course it is. But that's why you have the federal government saying, no, you're not allowed to do that. Unfortunately, these things are taking time. Yeah, Bob? Bob has... I haven't picked up... to my knowledge, I didn't pick up anybody's keys.
We're asking about someone's keys. That's why Mike's been distracted. Go ahead, Mike.
All right.
I've been distracted for multiple reasons. Tell me what you think. Okay, let's make this a little more local instead of just saying all the states should break up. Let's say hypothetically, and it's not legal for it to do so, but let's say hypothetically Texas were to secede and become an independent nation.
I wouldn't want Texas to do that.
But you're talking about all the states should break
right.
up.
What I want is California, Oregon, and Washington become their own state.
Oh, you only want the states you don't like to leave.
No, I like those states.
So you only want the states that you hate to stay together.
Now, I guarantee Alabama, Arkansas, Kansas City, Georgia, Mississippi.
So you want
LA?
The Confederacy to be a separate country?
Absolutely. Let them do it.
You know what? That, on a very superficial level, I'm sure you'll get a whole lot of liberals and progressives to agree with you. But here's the thing. That would mean that we have another potentially hostile nation on our borders.
Yeah,
and
but
that
they don't have the people.
But we would have a nation with its own military and its own politics. Imagine
We'll fight them.
Oh,
so
we'll go to war with them.
Yeah.
And then
why
we'll
not?
Conquer them and occupy them and absorb them back into the United States,
no,
but they'll be better people.
We're not going to occupy them. We're not going to absorb them back.
As long as they're a separate nation, there will be political and potentially military conflict. They are that different. So what? Is that what you said?
They don't like us. They don't vote. I mean, you have to come down at some time and say the rubber meets the road. They don't pay any taxes, these little
They are net consumers
Tennessee.
Of federal tax. Yeah.
New York pays more taxes than any of these countries. California pays more taxes than any of these little places like Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana.
Well, for what it's worth, a lot of the people you're talking about agree with you. They want to be separate from the United States. But you know what?
Let them go.
Now, with all the problems, I believe we are all stronger together. Even with That's what I believe, number one. Number two, I think the fact that these problems have persisted politically for 150 years since the Civil War.
The Civil War.
Wait a minute.
I
believe I was in the middle of a sentence here, Mark.
All right. Sorry.
I believe that that is an educational problem. We have failed. We have allowed states to be so in control of education that they are teaching fantasies and mythologies. And that is a thing that has helped to perpetuate the division of this country. Now, am I saying the federal government should control all the educational curricula in this country? No. But I think that we should all agree on what history is. And, you know, again, it's going to take a couple of generations. People have to die. People have to be born. And we have not made the kind of effort that is required in passing down knowledge and real history from generation to generation to help bring this country back together. People can still have different political views, but we need to agree on what the history means. That's my opinion.
All right. One last thing.
Yeah.
Why should South Dakota have two senators that have as much power as two senators in New York City and two senators in California?
I can give you a short answer to that, and it comes down to basic constitutional civics. Go to Wikipedia or go to Google and look up the Great Compromise. That's what it's called, the Great Compromise, and why we have a bicameral Congress where one side is based on population and the other side gets equal.
Yeah, it's the rural thing, because they wanted the farmers to have just as many votes as people in the city.
I am not going to go into the specifics.
I'm going.
But
look
it up. Look it up.
I know.
Okay. Well, I think you don't understand it. Okay. Thank you for calling, Mark. I appreciate it. Take care. Oh, that was fun. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT with Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner is on engineering. You can support KPFT and Think Wing Radio by going to kpft.org, going to the drop-down menu, hopefully picking this show, and contributing whatever you can. You can also go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, and you can listen to prior shows. You can go to links of stuff that I'm talking about, articles that even if I never get to, like ones I have here, that you can link to and read. And you can also follow me on Twitter at ThinkWing Radio. Okay, is it Ted up next? Okay, Ted, I appreciate your holding, and not your fault, but I'm going to try to go a little quicker so everybody can get on. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. Hopefully my discussion is going to be a little more, less visionary, I guess, than the last couple. It does seem to me, or do you agree, that it seems to me that the Republicans have a view that, I guess prior to Reagan, the Republicans and the Democrats used to have different opinions. But they were basically patriots with different opinions, and they would work things out.
Well, you know, the Voting Rights Act was bipartisan, Medicaid was bipartisan, so yeah, things got done.
Yeah, and then I guess it was Reagan that started it. It's like they became the party of Jesus or something, and therefore, if you were Democrat, you were, I guess, the party of what's not Jesus.
The Antichrist.
You know? Yeah, Satan or whatever. And so they stopped compromising. which is the basic glue that, you know, when these Tea Party people are running around saying, we're going to go back in time to the founding fathers, they're just, you know, we're not going to compromise. That's what the founding fathers were all about.
Yeah, I mean, the whole congressional bicameral system is called the Great Compromise.
Right. And everybody is supposed to be assumed that everybody's rational and men of goodwill and or women of goodwill, you know. People of goodwill,
yeah.
And they're supposed to
Reason together. Let us reason together would have been the concept.
And they just, you know, I mean, Barack Obama would try and do things their way. And, you know, he'd say, okay, I'll do this.
And then they're against it.
Yeah, and they would remain unchanged.
Yep.
I think, I don't remember which budget it was, but there was one budget where, because they'd been so completely traumatized by Republican extremism, the Democrats took their numbers and didn't even argue. They said, okay, we'll pass your budget, because they wanted some kind of budget,
yep,
to go through, because no budget would be worse than their bad budget. And they still turned it down.
Yep. Yeah, they're becoming just a totally obstructionist party.
Getting away with it is the press is constantly going, the parties can't work together.
We have a real problem with reportage in this country. Ted, I apologize. I have two more people I want to try to get before I have to go off the air. But I appreciate your being a caller, and I appreciate your opinion.
Hey, Johnson, one of the reasons why he went into Vietnam was that he didn't want the Republicans to go around him on the right, and he was afraid to just leave because he thought they would call Democrats pussies?
Well, I think getting into wars is just always easier than getting out, because whoever gets out, if they haven't won a clear victory by American standards, then, yeah, that's always the risk, and that's why getting into war is a serious business with mission creep. I apologize, Ted. I know you've been waiting.
That's okay. All right. Fair's fair.
I appreciate it.
Call back next week, Ted.
Take care, and thanks for listening to my opinion.
Well, I hope you'll call back, and I'll get some more. Take care. All right. Is it Jeremy up next? Jeremy. Wrong line. Jeremy, you're on the air. How you doing? Thanks for waiting. We need to keep this to like 3 minutes.
I just had a quick question for you. I wanted to get your opinion about something based off what the original caller was saying. What do you feel it would be like? I mean, I know that the two-party system's kind of thrown off and a little crazy, but what would it be like? I mean, as a progressive myself, if there wasn't a conservative side to be a check, do you think that progressives might take it too far, maybe push policy to an area where it would just be just too much progression at once? And do you think that checks and balances is helpful? What do you think is a hindrance?
I see a reason to have someone whisper. You know, the Roman conquerors, when they would come back for their big victory parades, often had a slave standing behind him reminding the conqueror, you are only a man. And I think that even the best-intentioned progressive policies need to have people poking holes in them and saying, well, you know, this doesn't work for some folks, and this is going to be politically difficult for other folks. And, yeah, I think that any political philosophy allowed to run wild will go too far. There is something to be said for keeping things within a range and keeping progression at a moderate pace. You know, you can argue it took too long to free the slaves. It took too long to give women the vote. It took too long to integrate the army. All of these things took too long. But if there were no progressives, they would never have happened. And if there were no conservatives, they might have happened sooner, but then we might have had the Civil War earlier. I mean, I don't know. You know, history, I love alternative history science fiction, because it's wonderful to get ideas on how other things, other alternative actions might have played out in time. And this is one of those imponderables, but it's worth pondering.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to kind of get your opinion on that.
I appreciate your calling. It's a great question. It's worthy of longer discussion. Call back. We'll have another talk about it.
Will do. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Take care. All right. Kevin, I believe you're going to be the last one for tonight. How are you doing? You're on the air.
Woo-hoo.
Woo-hoo.
I want to back up.
Hey, Kevin.
I want to back up some of the earlier statements with justifiable explanations.
Okay.
Was it Comey, James Comey?
Yes.
FBI director. No, he chose to not find charges, and I can understand why. You look at Wikipedia yourself, you'll see he's a director with HSBC, and HSBC just recently, you know, agreed to a $1.67 billion fine for, you know, drug laundering. So that might explain why Comey doesn't want to, you know, press charges. But also, a justification for, you know, the Democrats doing things that are more Republican, for instance. A Republican could never get rid of welfare, as Bill Clinton did. And
yeah.
Also, a Republican can never, get the Glass-Steagall removed, as he did with Robert Rubens as treasurer. And the other one, I think, was Johnson. He basically started with the war in Gulf of Tonkin, if you remember that, right?
The Gulf of Tonkin, yeah. There was a claim that a North Vietnamese... torpedo boat attacked a U.S. ship, and it turns out that probably didn't
happen.
Yeah,
it was bouncing across the bow, but that was enough for a decoration for a Democrat to start a war.
There's actually a question as to whether that incident happened in any way, shape, or form.
It wasn't. It's the tapes. There's actual the audio tapes, so they're just saying it was a U-boat bouncing in front. So there's a lot of things that the Republicans couldn't do that the Democrats did. And I'll leave you with this. That, you know, it doesn't really matter who wins tomorrow. It would be the polarization that's been, you know, concocted or stirring right now. The selection of not having the Supreme Court or your budget. What's it called when the budget has to be extended?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Basically, a temporary budget. There's a word for it. I can't come up with it.
Right. So anyway, I think the Dobbies might not be, you know, tomorrow apocalyptic, Mike. But,
yeah, Wednesday is going to be a big day. I mean, tomorrow is a big day, but Wednesday is going to be a big day, too. All right. Take care, all Kevin. I appreciate it very much. Take care. All right. Juan Flores is coming up with Jazz Latino. Great guy. I'm always taking 30 seconds of his time. He's always very nice about it. All right. Here's the sign-off quote for the day. If your vote didn't matter, they would not try so hard to suppress it. Remember it. Keep it in mind. Make sure, if you have not early voted, that you are online at the polls tomorrow before 7 p.m. Okay? You can go to my website. You can get the links to Harris Votes and Texas Votes. Anyway, have a great night. ThinkWingRadio.com. Go there if you have questions. And hopefully we'll be talking next Monday.
Join KPFT for the debut of Third Thursday Concerts at the Conservatory Underground Beer Garden and Food Hall in downtown Houston.
On Thursday, November 17th from 7 to 10 p.m., we'll be kicking off the series with music provided by Yogi G and the Generation Crew.
This will also be a volunteer appreciation party for all the great volunteers who make KPFT tick.
We invite you to come for some fun, food, music, and company with many KPFT volunteers, staff, and you.
Admission is free. Be there Thursday, November 17th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Conservatory Underground Beer Garden and Food Hall. 1010 Prairie Street, downtown between Main and Fannin. See you there. This is KPFT Houston.
Let's do that again.
There are places you go to get the quick news. You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touch our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations. You need a choice.
And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more. People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free. Sponsored, commercial-free. Sponsored, commercial-free. Listener-sponsored, commercial-free.
Member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free. Commercial-free.